Chapter 14. Eyes, and a misery headache in the middle of my brain. However, I came out, for I thought you might be waiting and grumbling like anything, if I was not there. The holes were already dug, and they set to work. Winterburn's fingers were endowed with a gentle conjurer's touch in spreading the roots of each little tree, resulting in a sort of caress, under which the delicate fibers all laid themselves out in their proper directions for growth. He put most of these roots towards the southwest, for, he said, in 40 years' time, when some great gale is blowing from that quarter, the trees will require the strongest holdfast on that side to stand against it and not fall. How they sigh directly we put 'em upright, though while they are lying down they don't sigh at all, said Marty. Do they? Said Giles. I've never noticed it. She erected one of the young pines into its hole, and held up her finger. The soft musical breathing instantly set in, which was not to cease night or day till the grown tree should be felled, probably long after the two planters should be felled themselves. It seems to me, the girl continued, as if they sigh, because they are very sorry to begin life in earnest just as we be. Just as we be? He looked critically at her. Who ought not to feel like that, Marty? Her only reply was turning to take up the next tree, and they planted on through a great part of the day, almost without another word. Winterburn's mind ran on his contemplated evening party, his abstraction being such that he hardly was conscious of Marty's presence beside him. From the nature of their employment, in which he handled the spade and she merely held the tree, it followed that he got good exercise, and she got none. But she was an heroic girl, and though her outstretched age, and was chill as a stone, and her cheeks blue, and her cold worse than ever, she would not complain, while he was disposed to continue work. But when he paused she said, Mr. Winterburn, can I run down the lane and back to warm my feet? Why, yes, of course, he said, awakening anew to her existence. Though I was just thinking what a mild day it is for the season. Now I warrant that cold of yours is twice as bad as it was. You had no business to chop that hair off, Marty. It serves you almost right. Look here, cut off home at once. A run down the lane will be quite enough. No, it won't. You ought not to have come out today at all. But I should like to finish it, Marty. I tell you to go home, said he, peremptorily. Can manage to keep the rest of them upright with a stick or something. She went away without saying any more. When he had gone down the orchard a little distance she looked back. Giles suddenly went after her. Marty, it was for your good that I was rough, you know. But warm yourself in your own way, I don't care. When he had run off he fancied he discerned a woman's dress through the holly bushes which divided the coppice from the road. It was Grace at last, on her way back from the interview with Mrs. Charmond. He threw down the tree he was planting, and was about to break through the belt of holly, when he suddenly became aware of the presence of another man, who was looking over the hedge on the opposite side of the way upon the figure of the unconscious Grace. He appeared as a handsome and gentlemanly personage of 6 or 8 and 20, and was quizzing her through an eyeglass. Seeing that Winterburn was noticing him, he let his glass drop with a click upon the rail which protected the hedge, and walked away in the opposite direction. Giles knew in a moment that this must be Mr. Fitzpiers. When he was gone, Winterburn pushed through the hollies, and emerged close beside the interesting object of their contemplation. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.